WBRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Hello and welcome to episode 584 of BRB UK. I am Coleman. Hi. And I wasn't saying it so slow because I was just checking to make sure what the episode number was, because I may have forgotten in the split second before we started recording. Yes, I'm Coleman. Hi, welcome to BRB UK. No Dan this week. He got pulled out in an emergency last minute. All should be okay.
To be fair, that gives you a good excuse for not knowing what episode title it was, because you didn't know you were going to need to know that.
And it also gives us run of the roost, as it were, to say. Tim is
yes.
Here. Tim's got a review game, which means that's a lot of talking. Coleman's talking about wrestling.
42 review games, to be precise, Coleman.
Well, let's not say it like that, because otherwise I will just stop the stream now and hang up and go.
I think that's why Dan's really off. He had an emergency. Oh, I've just remembered Tim has 42 games to talk about this week.
And I have wrestling, which kind of scares Dan, so he's gone away now.
Yes.
Yeah, but
combination of those two.
Everything should be fine. Tim, how are you, sir?
I am pretty good. Pretty good, all in all. I've had a reasonable week of goodness, and spring is very truly on the way. The daffodils are out. It's a good sign it's spring in England, because it still rains a lot, but at least there's some sunshine now and again as well. So, you know.
I was listening. So I've been streamlining things behind the scenes, trying to get the show running smoothly and set up live streams, but also kind of streamline the editing process a bit, give myself a bit extra time and less of a headache as we finish. But I got everything done in time yesterday, but I did squeeze in a live stream. I was listening to Gamers Confessional do their podcast and listen to their last episode, because they have a lovely story about daffodils where there is a whole argument between one of the hosts and an old man for nearly stepping on some daffodils while walking the dog. And it's caused some amusement for me on Twitter/X, where we were talking about that and going, wait a minute, anyone who doesn't listen to their show and is just commenting to my things, I sound like an insane person right now while we're just screaming about daffodils.
I mean, that's social media all around, no? Like, if you don't really know what people are talking about, I don't know what people are talking about half the time. Like, that may be, you know, me being an old Gen Xer or whatever, but yeah.
Fair point.
Yeah.
Well, that is their show. This is our show. So we should get cracking. And let's start off. You can start off first, Tim, because I believe this is a review game. So
yes.
Therefore, as Dan likes to lift the curtain a bit and always say lately, it's a contractual obligation that we talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, well, we say that, but, you know, we do get a fair choice of what we want to put ourselves down for review codes for. But yeah, just to be upfront, I got a review code for this, so take it with a pinch of salt if you like. But yeah, I've been kind of teasing you guys that I've had 42 games to talk about. And I have played 42 games, but all in a collection. And this is Llamasoft, the Jeff Minter story. And it's part of the Gold Master series, basically. And anyone that's unaware what the Gold Master series is, before we get into the Jeff Minter portion of it in a minute, it's a game, and this is only the second one in the series so far. But it's from a company called Digital Eclipse. The first one they made was for a game called Karateka, I think. Karateka? I may be mispronouncing that slightly. But it was a game where when they put up the sort of trailers for that initially, I was like, was that a real game? Is this a hoax? I've never heard of that game before in my life. And they're talking about it like it was like the second coming of Karate Jesus. And I'm like, are you sure you didn't mean IK Plus? Because I remember that. Like, that was the first, like, fighting game that I remember. I don't remember anything about Karateka. But having played this, I'm now more interested to go back in this. But the Gold Master series is generally, like, a kind of anthology collection in this case, but generally kind of a kind of treasure trove of different portions of stuff, and the last one was looking at one particular game and how that sort of fit into things, and I'd be interested to see exactly how they treated that, and I'm going to go back and look that up at some stage. But prior to that, they also did a thing called Atari 50, I believe it's called,
Okay.
And that was a collection of Atari games, and that's more the anthology thing that I think more is more kind of direct analog with the Jeff Minter story. But it's yeah, like I'm definitely going to pick up the Atari 50 thing, and I'll probably go back and look at the sort of history of Karen Tecker at some point. But I was interested in the Jeff Minter story primarily because it was someone that I am well aware of and have become a recent convert to being a fan of, but only through his VR games, so only through Polybius, which he put out on PSVR1. So that's only going back a few years. And Jeff Minter's career goes back almost as far as video games, basically. So
yeah, I think he's, because I'm kind of aware. So for those who aren't watching the video version of the show, we've got Attack of the Llamas, something
Mutant
like that.
Camels. But, I think this one.
Camels,
yeah.
That's it. Yeah, I remember there's like a lot of there's a lot of folks on llamas. That's why I went llamas.
Yes.
But I remember this one specifically. I think this was on an Amiga, and I had it in a random assortment of games. But I didn't know who Jeff Minter was until I was in my sort of early 20s. But I was aware of his games from being a child and just having these mad games.
And all right, I'd been aware, like loosely aware of him and aware of the stuff that the association with llamas, his company name is Llamasoft, that's in the title of this anthology of games. And like this, actually, the anthology of games and the collection and the story actually begins before Llamasoft was formed. It goes from the original kind of Jeff Minter games that came out before he made Llamasoft. And it kind of tells that story as it goes. And yeah, like it's something where I was, as I said, I was aware of that going in, but I didn't know the exact history of it. And this kind of really does fill in a lot of the details of that. As I said, it's a treasure trove of different things. Like there is a collection of games there. There is 42 different games, although they're not all entirely different, but I'll come on to that in a second. But there's 42 different games in there. But there's also a collection arranged in a timeline that you can kind of chronologically go through. Of like loads of different things associated with the development of those games. And some of my favorite things that they had were like old computer game adverts and old computer game magazine reviews that they have, which were just, really interesting to see that kind of evolution of the language used and the way they were described and stuff like that. But then there's also like other things that I don't know if they've ever been out before, but there's like things that have been seen by the public before, like the fanzines and stuff like that, that Jeff Minter created as part of Llamasoft. But I don't know if they've been available on his website before and stuff like that, but there's other things on top of that, that I'm not sure if he's made them available on websites before, but I've generally, never come across, but like the kind of exercise book notes of him planning out his Llamasoft games and like being on kind of, old graph paper and plotting out the different points of a sprite and stuff like that. And just like really interesting treasure trove of like little details and little things going on. And I didn't read everything because there was a ton of information in there, but I did read some of the extracts of the fanzines and here and there. And there's just like really interesting things like Jeff's reaction to like a new console coming out. And like, even though he never developed, or as far as I'm aware, he never developed for any Sega consoles, he was talking about the upcoming Sega machine. And I think that was the first Master System, and like looking forward to that coming out and stuff like that as well.
Right.
So it's a really interesting perspective. And even if you've got little to no interest in his games directly, it's just a really interesting look at the history of video games through the slightly psychedelic filter of one particularly zany designer, basically. But yeah, like there were times, and especially early on, well, actually very early on, the games are a bit rough, and games like pre Atari 600 and stuff, like the pre ZX Spectrum days and stuff like that, they can be a little rough and a little harder to necessarily appreciate. But I'd be interested to see how someone that, because I grew up with video games, and although this is even my times and before I was born, if you can believe in such a thing, Coleman, but like even this goes back even further, like there are things from like and I think he really started like making what I would regard as a good game. The first one I think was 82 was Abductor, And that sits really nicely alongside Space Invaders, which for me is like one of the first games I remember really loving. And Abductor is a different take on Space Invaders. You've got like, you're trying to protect these little humanoid sprites at the bottom of the screen while someone's trying to come down and kidnap them, and you're trying to blast them to stop them from kidnapping them. And it was like playing lost parts of my childhood. And I realized going through this why I'd never really played them. Like literally, when he was making games for the ZX Spectrum, I had an Atari 2600. When he was making games for the Atari ST, I had an Amiga. Like, we just kind of missed each other all along the way. And he's got a bit of a spotty kind of track record with, he was a big kind of guy on the C64 and the ZX Spectrum and the ZX81 and a few other consoles even before that, like the VIC-20, which I'd barely heard of before, sort of thing. And but then he kind of backed the wrong horses for a period of time as well. Like there was the Connex multi-system, which you probably never heard of because it never came to market. But he bought like a development kit for that for like £5,000 and £5,000 back in the 80s kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like that was a bit mis-. But then he was also like his opus kind of Tempest 2000 was kind of on the Atari Jaguar and like regarded as one of the best games on the Atari Jaguar. But I don't know about you. I remember seeing the Atari Jaguar in a Tandy's and looking at the controller and going, what the hell is that monstrosity? And then that was about my limit of interaction with the Atari Jaguar, even though I was a massive fan of the Atari 2600. But yeah, so we kind of missed each other throughout the years. But going back and going through this was just a really nice way of seeing the development of video games. And as I said, I'd be interested to see that someone that hasn't had that experience of growing up with video games, if they can be as appreciative of this, because I can see a game and go, right, this fits into the history of video games where I know it, and this is where this things start coming in. And I think Abductor was the first game that I was like, okay, I like this game. I could see me playing this game for a couple of hours, and I'm almost sad I didn't discover this game in my youth. But then you get to a game like Grid Runner, and Grid Runner is one that pops up throughout the collection as well. Like, it's, again, I think it was originally 82, maybe 83. But then that's one that he's remade for different systems at different times. And I said there's 42, and also Grid Runner is one that is remastered as part of this collection. So the one original game on this is Grid Runner Remastered, which basically you've got like a brand new interpretation of it where the grid that it runs on is no longer on a flat 2D plane. It's kind of off kilter. Basically you're being attacked from two different sides and different planes of things that kind of run from left to right or up and down the screen and fire a laser out. And if you get caught in that, you get killed. And other than that, it's a kind of centipede style game. So you've got like things in an advancing worm coming from the top of the screen downwards, and you've got to blast them before they get to the bottom, basically. That's the basic kind of description of it. But the Grid Runner Remastered, you can actually press a button and go back to the original style of game. You can flick between the two on the fly as well. And the remastered version, I actually found it a bit more tricky to kind of get to grips with exactly what was happening with some of the elements of the stuff. It's actually easier to play in the old thing. So yeah, that was a bit different. But it's something where... Yeah, as I said, I developed a good appreciation. I mean, Gridmaster is one of those ones where it comes back. And as I said, 42 games on there, but that's a bit misgiving because there are various versions of Grid Runner and other games where there's multiple versions. But for anyone that doesn't know, it's not like it has been in the last few eras of video game consoles. Like the 360 version and the PS3 version of a game are near identical these days. But that wasn't the case going back in the day, especially when you were interpreting an arcade style game and having an interpretation of that on home consoles. It used to be like, well, we'll make the best of this because we've got a very more limited color palette and we've got very different things going on. And then going over to a different system, you might have different limitations that you have to program for. So the two versions of the game could be quite different, even if they came out, you know, on consoles that were comparable. They could be quite different in terms of how they are. And just seeing those little differences was quite interesting. And yeah, like there's a point where Jeff Minter sort of splinters off from making games into making light synthesizers. And it's something where I think Psychedelia was the first one that he made. And there's a few others that he made since, and he made things for consoles. And I think there was one that he made for the Xbox 360. I think that was the last one, or maybe even the Xbox before that. But yeah, like, and then you kind of get to the age where he's making light synthesizers in combinations with a video game as well. And I don't know if he was definitely the first person, but it sounded from the like documentary footage and stuff that comes up that it sounded like he was the first person to make a light synthesizer as well, which is where you've got like music going in time to, you know, the beats. Although I think the original one he did wasn't necessarily synced up to music. It was just that you could operate it and do stuff, and that would have an effect on what was going on screen. And then, yeah, like his later games like Space Draft, which I think is one of the only ones that's missing from this collection overall, that I was half expecting to be there. But like that's a kind of, yeah, combination of the two, and Polybius and his latest release, Akka R, which I've picked up and only played very briefly because I was playing my way through 42 other games this week. That's something where, he's kind of continued that idea. And seeing the progression of those, of his kind of shooter-based ideas, and then the light synthesizer thing, and then the kind of construction of the two of them, and that, for me, that makes a typical Jeff Minter game these days kind of thing. It is the combination of those two things. And just seeing the history of that and how that kind of ran through and operated is just, was really fascinating. And I was really glad to get the experience to kind of catch up on some things that I kind of missed out on growing up. And as I said, it almost like filled in gaps of my childhood playing through these different games. So it was really interesting. But then coming on to games where it went from I appreciate this game because of its time and where it was and what we've built on since. But then you come to the later games going on, and particularly for me, like those games that he's famous for with the llamas and the camels and all that sort of stuff. And the Attacking Mutant Camels I thought was fine, but it was okay. It was good. As I said, I really like Grid Runner, and the new version of that is cool. But I think the standout one for me, and the one that I didn't appreciate when I was first playing, was Tempest 2000. But when, like a lot of these games, when you get into the kind of zone and you're kind of hyper-focused on playing and trying to get through the levels and stuff, that's when you really kind of, you get a moment in these games where you go, like Tempest 2000 is the prime example, because it was one where I was like, I don't see what the fuss is about. Why is everyone going on about this? Why was this such a big thing? And then all of a sudden, the gameplay and the way you're supposed to play the game just clicks. And then you're like, oh, okay. And you get in that kind of zen state of just being in a shooter and being in the moment and kind of moving faster than you can really like consciously think about. And yeah, that just becomes, yeah, that kind of is a good summation of exactly what makes a good Jeff Minter game. But yeah, overall, yeah, the collection and just going through things was just really enjoyable, really well put together, really high quality. It's kind of set on four separate timelines that kind of cover different eras of Jeff Minter's career. But yeah, like, it's really well done. I really like it. I think if you're at all interested in supporting a high level of game preservation, this is something you should be looking to support, basically, because this is game preservation done exactly the right way, where you've got like various versions of different games, and you've got like the context that helps set them in their place in history. And I think that's what makes this really interesting. That what makes it a recommendation for people that, you know, if you love Jeff Minter, you've probably already possibly picked this up. But if you haven't and you're interested in the history of video games, this is something I recommend you buying and supporting. And just like, as I said, I'd be interested to see if that holds up if you weren't alive and weren't playing games throughout those eras. But for me, it was absolutely fascinating. Really enjoyed my time with it, and highly recommend it for the quality of product that it is, for the interest in Jeff Minter's games and kind of and how that is, But then also just, as I said, yeah, the kind of general preservation of video games and that being something that I want to see done well. And this is an example of it being done really well.
Cool. So what platforms is this available on?
So I was playing on PS5, but it's available on both PlayStations, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, that is, Xbox.
Oh, I thought you meant 2 and 3.
Well, yeah, Xbox, X and S, Xbox One, and Switch as well. And Switch might actually be a nice way to play it as well, because I can imagine a lot of those games being interesting on there. They're mainly like all shooting games, so if that doesn't interest you, that might be of less interest. There is one called like Hover Bother and another one about dropping hammers on people's heads, or avoiding having hammers dropped on your heads, but most of them are kind of shooting games. And yeah, like I said, I really generally recommend it. It has been good fun, and it's cool. Out now. And it's $29.99 in the States and $24.49 in the UK.
How dare you give out US prices on this British show? BRB UK, Tim, not US. You want US prices? Bring back the other shows. You, Tim, you who took the shows away behind closed doors.
Me.
Took everyone's favorite shows away. He's got them there, but just off camera. BRB Blue, the Boom Show. Barrelcast, Flicks, they're all there. He's got them in a little lockbox. Frauds trying to get out.
Week and just banging don't carefully on his Avarian.
Yes. My turn.
Yep. I'll tag you in, Coleman. I'll tag you in.
So, this doesn't show up very well on the background replacement. I had my belt ready. WWE 2K24 is here. And as usual, I am playing the latest WWE game because, you know, I'm a wrestle boy. I like wrestling. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, when mm-hmm. the sun goes down, it's Wrestle Town, and I will wrestle with my hands and my feet. And this is, I probably say this every year except for like the odd occasion, this is the best WWE game so far. And that is especially true from 2K because they really have learned their lesson since they started going in-house instead of using Ukes, and Ukes went off to work with AEW. They've really, really come into their own and sort of learned their lesson after 2K20. And each year they keep the same gameplay, improve on the animations, improve on the mechanics, the look of the characters, like it's subtle changes, but now they're getting into bigger changes along the way whilst keeping... Okay. Previously what is there. So we're seeing the return for the first time in I don't know how long now to previous matches that have been taken out of the game, like Special Referee and the Casket match. We're finally seeing new matches thrown in. We got the Ambulance match this year. And whilst keeping stuff that you might be used to, like your TLCs, Royal Rumbles, Elimination Chambers, Hell in a Cell, Cage Match, like all that kind of stuff is all there. And also the previous game modes. So, yes, if you're going to jump in this, play with some mates, play on your own. You've got a vast array of characters and matches to get on with and to keep you busy. It is very enjoyable, plays really well. And if you're a fan, it's incredibly accurate with all the character designs from most eras, actually, at this point. Okay. There's quite a large roster of characters for you to play as off the bat and unlock along the way, and plus DLC that's going to come along the way, even though it's horribly monetized because 2K. anyway, so along with that, you've got your regular gameplay with some tweaks thrown in. One of the biggest ones is the weapon system's been a little bit overhauled. They've added the ability to throw weapons now, which has been an immense level of entertainment for me when you're trying to attack someone and they keep getting up and you just pick up a chair and just lob it at their head and go, ah, have that, Undertaker, you dick. So that's been quite fun. And that's all good. The big thing, the big draw for this year's game is it's the celebration of WrestleMania, which I think the first time I was doing one of these games for the podcast when I guested on, their big draw was all the big matches of every WrestleMania at the time. So they're doing the same thing again, but like 10 years on, I think, however long ago I started doing this. So that's pretty cool. So you've got the showcase mode, which is going through all these different matches. You'll have like Andre Giant versus Hulk Hogan from WrestleMania 3, Rock versus Austin from 17, and then more recent ones like many of the Undertaker's streaks, or I've got a feeling there should have been some Brock Lesnar ones in there, but he's been taken out for reasons of a legal nature, along with Vince McMahon.
But not Hulk Hogan this time, no?
No, Hulk Hogan's been back for a while now. Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Let me tell you something,
given the racism,
brother.
Okay.
He was punished for what seemed like the relevant amount of time to get over it in WWE, which I think is about 5 years. And then they went, okay, he can come back now because our CEO is a big problem, or COO is a big problem. I don't know what McMahon was. Chairman of the board was a big problem and one of our biggest
stars. Misogynist by the sound of it, but yeah.
Yes. So the showcase mode is all WrestleMania themed and kind of leading on into just in time for this year's WrestleMania coming in April, in like 2 weeks, I think. And then the other thing is the My Rise mode, which that's more like your story mode, which I'm finding a lot of enjoyment out of. They've gone into the two separate versions of My Rise, one for female wrestlers and one for male wrestlers. And as a female wrestler, you're kind of starting off in an indie production and making your way into the WWE through the NXT program and then up to the main rosters and fighting your way to the top. Whereas as the male storyline, which has been quite an interesting one, it follows on the current day storyline of Roman Reigns being the world champion, WWE champion for over 1,000 days at this point. Whereas in the game, he just gets bored and goes, yeah, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm going to go to Hollywood like The Rock and make films instead. And you guys can squabble over my belt. So you're kind of trying to pick up the parcel from where he's dropped it and try to get the championship for yourself and become like the big dog of WWE. So that's all been really good fun as well. And there's a lot of silliness to be found along the way. It's a build off the previous couple of years. You have you have your matches, you've got your social media, backstage stuff, all these kind of elements that go together. So you have your storyline cutscenes, and then you'll go backstage and you can talk to people. You can look on your nondescript social media platform on your private messages, and that can set you up to carry on different branching storylines of the path that you're on, but also side stories and things that you can do along the way as well, which is quite fun. So yes, those are your story modes. The last one is, I always forget the name of it, I think it's called My Faction. This is the one I was a bit dubious about the last couple of times. This is the card game, but not a card game. Right. This is the excuse for microtransactions, basically. Which I was okay with initially, but dubious about it because it just looked like, from first glance, it just looked like they crammed in a collectible card game and basically FIFA Ultimate teamed it. And I don't, and that's coming from someone who does not understand how FIFA Ultimate Team works because I've never tried to play it. I just understand there's cards involved and a lot of scamming children out of money online and influencers getting famous through just spending loads of money on it. Back in the day.
They do seem to have learned a few things from the kind of FIFA model, and even though we've gone on from FIFA, you kind of understand that. But in terms of like the card game, as you said, but then also like how they're developing it and how they're just doing roster changes and then not doing major changes every year. But do you think there's enough there? Like, say, for a fan like me rather than yourself, you're a super fan, you pick up the game every year. I assume you're happy with it overall this year? It sounds like you're reasonably happy with it. But then would you advise for someone that's a casual fan, are they doing enough from year to year to pick up every variant of the game? Like,
no, because to be honest, if you're a casual, I mean, it's the same. If you were a casual fan of FIFA and you didn't need to pick it up for all the team changes and stuff, then, and it's not even called FIFA anymore, so.
Yes, yeah.
EA's football club, whatever we're calling it these
EA
days.
EAFC.
You know, the sensible thing would be to wait till the new one comes online, it becomes available, and then buy the previous year's ones for a much heavier discount. Or in WWE's case, you could wait till Christmas, and this will probably be about £20, because it happens every time, and every year I go, do you know what? I might just wait till Christmas and then pick this up. And I never do. I buy it on launch. I'll never learn. but I keep finding heavy discounts on them the last few years. So that's been good. But yes, going back to the the My Faction mode.
Right.
What this actually is, you start, and it's been kind of, you can't avoid it now, because if you pre-order the game or buy like the Super Legendary Edition or whatever, part of the bonus of that is getting these special cards for that game. So there is some incentive to kind of then make you go in and play it. And even when you watch like the pay-per-views, they'll go, put in this code to get the Hulk Hogan superpower Thunder in Paradise card. That would be amazing. I'd actually play that one. What this is you start a faction, you pick two teams of four male wrestlers, four female wrestlers, and they're all picked through the cards that you get. And then you fight actual matches, you play actual games. Oh, yeah. And then there are different cards for different kinds of scenarios. So fighting styles, you like your brawlers, your grapplers, submission experts, high flyers, that kind of stuff. And they'll all have their different advantages and disadvantages in different matches. And also there's different card types. You've got your silver, bronze, silver, gold, and then it starts going into gems. So you've got like emerald, all the way up to like pink diamond, and it keeps going crazy from there. And then you've got different kinds of like loner cards and things. Like you've got cards that you can evolve. You've got cards that you can use a couple of times, and then that card is disregarded forever. Like I had a Roman Reigns card, and that's a new thing apparently this year. I had a free agent card. It was a Roman Reigns card. It was awesome. I used it in three matches and then it disappeared. And then I contacted technical support and they went, that's a free agent card. It just disappears. I went, I wish I'd read the instructions before I did that, because now I look like an idiot. so that was good. But that's a new thing. In my defense, I did not know that was a new thing in there. But yeah, I kind of avoided it last time, because even though there are microtransactions tied to it, there's not really an incentive to buy stuff unless,
right,
like,
yeah.
But I can see how you would, because it's that mobile game mentality of, oh, you can just skip the queue of grinding and buy stuff. So be warned if you're a bit susceptible to that stuff. But this is the reason I really wanted to talk about this. Last year, they started adding characters to this mode that you could only play through this mode, which really annoyed me.
Right.
Because it started off by me seeing some preview stuff, and they had like an action figure version of John Cena, and he looked really cool. He looks like an action figure. He's John Cena. You can play as him. Only in that mode. And there was no way of getting him into the like exhibition, play with your friends, play online, anything like that. Just had to have this card game thing. And some people were working out, but then they started doing it not just for costumes, for actual characters that weren't in the game. They put them in the game, but only in this mode. And that was really annoying. So then some clever people, what they were doing, because any of the, even though the game's not cross-play and not cross-save, all the like creator wrestler logos, movesets, all that kind of stuff that you upload to the community creators, that can be used on any platform.
Right.
So people on the PC would hack the game, extract the character, have it kind of interlace over a creator character, and then upload it. And then you could download it. And then about 3 months before this game came out, they removed that completely to block people from doing that. They updated the terms and services. They all banned people for doing that now. So that annoyed some folks, and there were certain characters that just wouldn't work if you did that, like the action figure John Cena. There was just no way of getting him out, even through creator wrestler modes. This time,
are you sure you just couldn't see him?
You know, Tim, you just couldn't play as him. And they because they had an unlockable version of John Cena that you couldn't see, and it was all his clothes and no character model. And it was a really
stupid, is the opposite of his opposite of his Oscar appearance as well, like where it was,
I didn't watch it.
He was very much seen.
I don't watch things like that.
And naked.
But yeah, that was a dumb meme from like 7 years ago that people were still latching onto for some reason. Anyway, the real reason I wanted to mention this is because now there are cards in that card mode when they introduce certain characters and things, you can play them. It adds it to your main roster in the game, so you can use it in other modes.
Okay,
the action figure John Cena is now joined by an action figure Cody Rhodes, which I now have those two and I'm happy with. Some people have kind of, they've crawled through the game's code and found there's a toy Hulk Hogan coming as well. So I'm going to be on the lookout to see how I get that, because I want a toy faction of wrestlers because they look funny. There's like an older version of Sheamus and Seth Rollins, and I can't remember who the third, there was a fourth card somewhere as well. But There's these cards you can unlock in the game, and it will now add the characters over. So all in all, an improvement, I think.
Yeah, that's a bit more player-friendly.
I won't say, because this is, if you say this is the best wrestling game of all time, it's very divisive, because I know, like, our friend Ed, he's big into one of the SmackDown games being the best of all time. I know a lot of people have a lot of favor for WWF No Mercy on the N64 being the best of all time. I'm quite partial to WWE 13, the CM Punk cover, you know.
I thought from the footage you were playing before, like, graphically, this looked very impressive. Like, it's almost in danger of being, like, more realistic looking than actual wrestling.
It's impressive looking, but it is very similar to last year's look, I feel. In fact, I've been booting up because, you know, I make the characters each year. I'll make us and friends and stuff and play WrestleMania and what have you. I was just switching to one game, writing down some formulas and things, and then jumping back to the other one, and like all the assets and stuff that I've used, they've all worked just fine this time. They haven't given you that ability to port your character over yet. Which is still annoying, but it's that sort of similar level that when you make the same thing, it's going to look exactly the same as it did last year. Looks impressive, but it has been
down formulas, and I've got images of you with like conical flasks, like pouring things and making stuff, and having a big Frankenstein machine behind you.
before we had online creator characters, I used to be part of a very fun wrestler community where the only way of getting these characters were you would make it and then you would write down all the little numbers and options and things in menus that people have written down, put them online, and then you copy them out and then you do them yourself to create characters. Brock Lesnar being the one that I did, that was my little claim to fame back in the day, because it got copied all the flipping time and I kept running into him fighting online matches. Anyway, really good game. I'm really enjoying it. I don't think it's the best wrestling game ever made, but I think in terms of what they do in wrestling games these days, that's all down to personal preference, your type of wrestling game, what have you. I think what they do with wrestling games these days, this is the best version of this type of game. I think this is the best wrestling game that 2K have put out, is probably the best way to say it. It's very good. It's worth picking up. I don't know if I'd recommend it for, because the base game is, well, if you buy on PC, it's £50. Great. That's fine. £50. I think that's fair. If you buy this on a modern-day console, if you buy it on a last-generation console, I think it's £55. So you've got £5 extra for playing it on an older generation console that doesn't play as well as on the PC. To play it on the modern-day generation of consoles, £64.99. So £65. Mm. I believe the Legend Edition, I think it might be more than I'm thinking, but I think it's £120. Which is insane.
The We Saw You Coming edition.
Well, that gives you, because I think there's a mode, you've got the regular version, then you've got the version that comes with the season pass. Then you've got the version that comes with the season pass plus the extra characters that you wouldn't get through the season pass. Right. Which is, and that was the one that Brock Lesnar was on the cover that they removed last minute. Ah. The Legend Edition. But yeah, it can be pricey getting into these games, but I think they're worth playing. But I just don't think they're worth £70 or £65. I think it's better to get. I mean, I paid £50 for the PS5 version, but that's just because I shop around online and I refuse to pay full price for modern day games now. But yes, this is available. Yes, PC, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and it's out now. Yeah.
I will fight you.
All right, Coleman. We're gonna have to.
I will fight you.
You can try
anytime, anywhere, but probably my house. On the couch.
I think they've made the reversal system a bit more like on the nose, so I'm struggling to reverse at the moment. But yeah, once I've got that down, you've got no chance, mate. Right.
Well, I have to fight you before that.
Let's talk news, because we've got a few headlines to run through, and we have spoken a long time on the games we've done played this week, so we're going to have to route through a few things.
There's 43 games, to be fair, Coleman, so, you know.
It just keeps getting funnier, Tim. Mario Day, if you don't know, that's March the 10th. If you put MAR 10, it looks a bit like it says Mario. Mario Day has happened, and they made some announcements. Nothing too major, so very quick to rattle through. There is a Mario Brothers movie sequel in development. We know that there's spin-offs in development as well. There's a Donkey Kong movie, I think, in the works. But the sequel to Mario Brothers 2 is officially in development, and that is meant to be out in April 2025. Mamma mia, it's a mia Chris Pratt. There were two release dates for previously announced games. First, you've got the remake of Paper Mario The Thousand Years Year Door. That's coming out very soon, the 23rd of May. And Luigi's Mansion 2, the HD Luigi's Mansion 2, which I think, wasn't that 3DS originally?
Yes. Well, I'm very confused as how they're going to make that work. They have to
rework some
puzzles and some things, but yeah.
Yeah, anything that required the 3D function, they would just take out.
No, thinking about it, I don't think anything actually required the 3D to solve any puzzles or anything, so maybe they'll
be fine. Yeah. Just be fine.
I thought it had already come out, by the way. I'm a big fan, but I'm not sure I care. But
is 2 and Dark of the Dark Moon, or whatever it was called, are they the same game or are they different games?
No, that's 3, I believe.
Okay. So, yeah, 1 and 3 we've had. Yeah, and then 2 was the handheld. But now that's, 27th of June. Also available right now on Nintendo Switch Online. The Game Boy versions of Mario Golf, Mario Tennis, and Dr. Mario are available. And Nintendo and LEGO have partnered again to make Mario Kart LEGO sets, which we've seen previews for, but we'll get a full reveal soon. That's announced for the 2025. We're not sure when just yet. Probably close to the film release, I reckon, as we had a bit of Mario Kart available in the previous film. Good
that
film.
That's true.
I liked it.
It was fun.
Mm. Right, as we have tend to do for like the last year, I think, let's talk about some studios shutting down and disappointing things in the game industry. Deviation Games is the latest one. And this was surprising because they'd announced their partnership with PlayStation back in 2021. They were meant to be working on a big game. And then at some point, I think last year, a bunch of employees were hitting LinkedIn to say that they'd been let go. And it was been done very quietly. You know, internet. And now the studio has been shut down, which is a shame because, you know, not only are people unemployed and they're going to have to struggle to find more work because there's a lot of unemployment in video games at the moment, but also there was a PlayStation exclusive game being worked on that will never see the light of day now.
It's all right. PlayStation don't make exclusive games anymore, apparently. It's given up.
That's Xbox, isn't it?
I think everyone. Like, they're making another GTA. We're all just going to give up and go home now.
Yeah. When's that? Is that next year?
Think so. Yeah, 2020.
Okay, I'll holster my hype for now. some good news, though. Activision QA workers, they have voted to form the largest US video game workers union to date.
Yay.
Good. So they are taking full advantage of... I've completely forgotten... This is the problem with live video. When I have a brain fart, I've completely forgotten what I'm going to be talking about. This is organized with the support of a CWA Microsoft neutrality agreement that was signed in 2022, wherein Microsoft have committed to taking a neutral approach towards unionizing refrain from hindering union discussions at the company, as well as offering streamlined process for choosing to join a union, which is great because we know in the US they've got a whole thing on union busting from way back in the days of Walt Disney still being alive when unions were considered communism.
Well, considering the origins of Activision, it's really strange that it's grown into this massive kind of amorphous kind of capitalist concentration of something where everyone kind of holds them up as an example of, you know, the big evil in corporation in video games type of thing, when they kind of splintered off from Atari and were the people that were like, we're not getting paid well enough as video game designers, so we're gonna go make our own company, and then to have become this. So it's good to see them actually getting some workers' rights back and unionizing a little bit as well. So this is a good step in the right direction.
Well, I like this for two reasons. Because one, it's actually given us a high point of the Microsoft buying Activision Blizzard King thing. But ABK. Also, ABK. Also, so this is a group of just over 600 quality assurance workers, which is great because that is, within video games, that is the team that gets the short end of the straw all the flipping time.
Yeah, they're the first to get shafted.
They get shafted. They're the lowest paid. They get shut down, moved around, and blamed a lot as well. Like, I don't know if you remember the Cyberpunk having all the problems.
Yes.
And they went, oh, our QA testers probably didn't pick that up. Thanks for throwing us under the bus, guys. And that had nothing to do with shareholders or wanting money or trying to cash in on quickly getting to the last generation of consoles or in time for Christmas. And yeah, so it's good to see them actually being able to unionize. And the role of the QA tester is obviously incredibly important. And it's getting kind of reflected on these days as well, seeing a thing of where a lot of developers in-house, they require like a QA rep to be taken from their team and have them there and there to work with them alongside to test things on the fly. And it's a very important role. You know, in my IT days, doing QA stuff was incredibly important. So I can imagine that's tenfold when it comes to video games.
Yeah, I don't know if this is the case. As you know, I know precious little about video game development, despite being in and around it for a few years, but I'd imagine that QA is more in danger from AI, at least immediately, than a few other roles as well. That's something where that might be something they're looking to replace people with first and foremost. As you say, just because QA's they're always, you know, the thin end of the wedge, or always the first people to get shafted, I could see that being something where AI is looked at something to not necessarily replace the whole team, but replace members of it and have people operating AI to kind of test games rather than having people doing it. No?
Here's a fun one. As we're carrying on with the Embracer's never-ending quest to try and get rid of their ridiculous amount of debt, they've sold off Saber Interactive along with 38 ongoing game development projects and a bunch of their studios that are connected to them as well. I'm not going to go through them all because that is a huge list of the studios that are going and the studios that are staying. But there is a
You're
company
free.
Called
Run.
Beacon Interactive were the buyers. So they've picked up the studio along with all the sub-studios for $247 million. As part of this as well, Embracer's now ceased all operations in Russia. Yeah,
I guess that's good. Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't get what the confusion is with some of the developers that they're not sure if they have purchased or not. Like 4A Games, the Metro developer, and Zen Studios, who make like Pinball and a few other things. Like, I don't understand what the confusion is with who owns. Like, why do people not know who owns them? You would have thought that was something that was known, a fairly black and white thing, no? But. Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know if it's because it's a sub studio or because the licenses they were working on, or I don't know. But yeah, again, you can look it up online. I'll put a link in the show notes. But there is a big old list of who's going where. Aspyr remains though, so you can look forward to more okay ports of Star Wars games of old coming to modern day platforms. So that's good. Are they still working on that Knights of the Republic remake?
Yes, I believe that's something that came as part of the deal as well. Basically, that was one of the named games.
I thought it got taken off Aspyr and given to someone else.
I think that was mentioned as part of this deal, I believe.
Okay, there's a Watch Dogs live action film in the works. We'll leave it at that. Really, it's not huge news at the moment. I'll give you for this reason. The amount of times we report on this show that a video game project has been picked up to make a movie out of, and we hear nothing more, especially when it comes to A24. So we'll see what's going on there. And especially with Ubisoft games. Where's that Splinter Cell game movie they spoke about? They announced that the same time as the Assassin's Creed movie.
It's out in the wild. It's this very stealthy comic.
Where's the Assassin's Creed Netflix series?
Again, it's just lurking in the shadows, waiting to pounce on you when you're not looking.
Okay. I was going to put footage in, but I don't know if it would get us pulled or not, so I won't now. Right. But there is okay. a leaked trailer, which isn't really a trailer. It's more of a pitch project video available right. online that was leaked from that that huge data breach over at Insomniac, where they just stole a bunch of data from the servers. But this looked like a pitch for a multiplayer tie-in to Insomniac's Spider-Man. Specifically Spider-Verse related, which we did say that there was a Spider-Verse project reference within games files and things. But this looked to be, from what I can glean from the project, because it shows Peter, Miles, and Gwen Stacy, not seen in the Insomniac games thus far, fighting alongside each other. And then as you get towards the end of the trailer, starts pulling in other people. Now, a few things to notice from this is, yes, lots of Spider-Men. You can see Silk in there somewhere. You can see Miguel O'Hara. You can see Ben Reilly. There's lots of different Spider-Men for you to take a look at. You can see it's a pitch because that is not a female model for Gwen Stacy. That is a male model wearing Gwen Stacy's clothes. It might. I think it's the Spider-Verse model for Miles Morales, and then they've just stuck a Gwen Stacy costume on him. Possibly. The other thing is, again, multiplayer looks like either 5 or 6 player taking on the Sinister Six, which makes me think, and you see some Venom footage as well, Venom fighting, but it looks like it's from the point of a player, which makes me think that this could have been a 5-on-5 or a 6-on-6 Spider-Man v Sinister Six game, which is less exciting to me than just swinging around New York with my mate Tim.
Right. But we're not so into the online multiplayer competitive stuff generally. And we're, you know, anti-live service and all that type of stuff. And we kind of want to see Insomniac concentrate on single-player games because it's what they're best at and it's what we love them for and all that type of stuff. But this looks really cool. I'm happy that they're not doing something of this nature because this looked really interesting and quite cool and I would have been on board. But yeah.
It's cool as well. I mean, so in Spider-Man 2, very, 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 very mild spoilers in that. I'm not actually spoiling anything at all, but there are some Spider-Verse references, which some people just assumed automatically because Sony, it could be just tied into the films. And we've seen in the latest film, the last two films, there were Spider-Man Insomniac costume in the first game and then characters in the second game. So the thinking was, we're just going to see more of that back and forth between the game and the film. But this could have been what the references actually were, that they were planning a big Spider-Verse game because that's this. Yeah. I like the idea of being Spider-Man swinging around with a mate in a big story-focused game. Not so much. It was like that. I got very excited when Gotham Knights got announced because I was like, oh, cool, a multiplayer version of Arkham that I can play with my friends. And then when they went, all right, it's actually a live service game, but we took all the live service stuff out because that's not in vogue at the moment. And we've actually ruined a game and it plays really bad and it's 30 frames a second and all that stuff. It was kind of that sort of level of excitement. If they just went, we're going to add a co-op, optional co-op to Insomniac Spider-Man, I'd be like, yes, I am all over that. But if they go, we're going to make Suicide Squad the Spider-Man game, no, I don't want that. So this is an internal pitch video. It wasn't an actual official trailer. It could have been exciting, but I'm imagining that they put this forward to Sony and Sony at some point have decided, because at one point they were really looking into games as a service. They wanted to pump out a lot of games as a service games not long ago.
Yeah.
Like within the last 2 years, I think, and then suddenly turned it around. And it's probably makes sense with, especially with superhero games where you've got the backlash on Avengers, where you've got the backlash on Suicide Squad and the weird turnaround on Gotham Knights, it probably makes sense to just focus on the big story games instead.
Yes, I'd rather they made this than fired people from Insomniac, though. Like, if that was the choice between the two, I'd rather they'd gone ahead with this project and seen if it could have come to something, maybe. But I guess they're like, no,
fired implies they did something wrong, Tim. They were made redundant.
Yeah,
it's a shame. The games industry is all kinds of messed up at the moment on all forms everywhere. Games media is dying and games are all over the place. Yes. Tone back. It's, in fact, Spider-Man was called into question at the last Sony PlayStation financial call thing where they were going, hey, Spider-Man went incredibly over budget. Stop doing that. Because it's just too big a gamble.
It does seem weird that it went so wildly over budget when it was a sequel game that based a lot of its kind of structure and engine and stuff on the previous game. You would have thought they might have got a better return on that maybe. And yeah, their margins are terrible at the moment, so they're probably looking to try and slim those sort of things down going forward.
Okay. You want to take this last one, Tim?
I'll take this last one.
I didn't even see you put that on the agenda.
I snuck it in. I didn't tell you I was going to, but yeah. But no, yeah, this is a bit of good news this week on back of some bad news. So yeah, another gaming for good. This is another return of Make-A-Wish International, and it's something that you guys can get involved in going forward. So just be wanting to make everyone aware of an upcoming thing called Wishmakers Live. It's returning for its third year. And Wishmakers Live is Make-A-Wish International's largest content creator event focused on granting wishes to children with critical illnesses, which, you know, that's generally what the charity focus on. But the event tasks creators via Twitch and YouTube to join the cause and make wishes come true by streaming and fundraising anytime during the month of April. So I believe anyone can get involved in this. You can check out some more details and make sure that is the case. But yeah, just going with a quote from their press release as well. Wish children have increasingly turned to gaming and online content to help combat the isolation and mental health challenges brought about by their illnesses and medical treatment. Growing number of wishes fall into the gaming entertainment category. I wish to be a game developer and I wish to meet my favorite streamer are becoming popular wishes. So this is something that you can help make a reality by actually just playing games, raising some money for them, and helping grant children's wishes in the process. So again, yeah, and just wanted to highlight another thing as Make-A-Wish International are looking to do some good with gaming again. So that's something we like to highlight. For more information about Make-A-Wish International in general, go to worldwish.org. And yeah, we'll hopefully put a link to that in the show notes so other people can jump in and do that as well. But yeah, again, you know, just Make-A-Wish International looking to do some good with gaming. We like to highlight that. Go and look them up.
Yes.
Go and join in and do what you can to do that as well. They also, I don't know if you saw Common, but they commented on the blog on one of our previous episodes, just thanking us for making note of them as well. But it's something that we like to shine a light on people doing good in gaming. And this is them doing that as well. So we'll happily do that again. So yeah. Go and give them some love and support.
Now not to knock the charity.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is, why would you want to meet like Sniper Wolf when you could meet John Cena? Huh?
But you wouldn't be able to see him when you did meet him, Coleman. That's useless.
Tim,
bad wish.
John Cena has the most granted wishes of any celebrity ever.
Yes. He's got a lot of time in his hand.
He brought a bunch of kids out for his last year's WrestleMania. It was quite sweet.
Yeah.
Anyway, right, we got to wrap up the show, but not before we get our plugs in. First of all, we've got to say go over to tpublic.com/store/BRB, where we have merch. We have t-shirts, we have stickers, we have mugs, we have face masks, if you're still rocking those things. And they have all kinds of not just Big Red Barrel related things, but video game related items on there. I like the Sonic design. I like the Tabletop Tuesday shirt. Big fan of that one with the kaiju fight. And of course, we've got Dan's face on there because originally it was to wind him up. It's now become a source of entertainment for Dan where he loves to tell people to buy his face.
So cheer so Jana.
If you could go
Dana,
do that.
Buy his face. He's having a tough week. Cheer him up with some
all
face.
Proceeds, all proceeds go to Dan's face, which is a complete
you get
lie.
Nothing.
Oh, that is the wrong
you
button.
You lose. Good day, sir.
I was going to hit that one.
Eating my dust.
There we go. Right, all proceeds go to somewhere. I don't know, Tim probably. No. Some go to the artists. Some go to, I'm imagining a big chunk goes to tpublic.com.
Yes,
also,
so, but we get a little slither. So, yeah.
There is a day that happens after Monday. We like to call it Tuesday, and Tim likes to do things on it, specifically board game related, which you would do on the top of a table. That's why we call it Tabletop Tuesday.
Anyone doesn't know, each and every Tuesday, we do an event called Tabletop Tuesday at the Loading Bar in Stoke Newton. Most weeks you can come along and play a feature game, and if you play that feature game that evening, you can win a copy of the game at the end of the evening. We didn't do that last week, but we had a special guest with Kugo. Thank you very much for coming along and showing us their game. We'll be having them come back as a feature game before their Kickstarter launches later this year in sort of May-ish time. But yeah, like, that was a fun little dexterity game. We have a completely different game this week, but a very good one. It is Jaws, the board game. It is a really good kind of movie tie-in game of, you know, the movie.
Of what movie? Of
famous, what's the name? Jaws.
Oh. Jaws, come. It was Jurassic Park.
Like the shark. We may have a Jurassic Park game coming up in the future as well by the same company, Coleman. It's also
those are two films I like.
Yes, exactly.
Land Jaws and Sea Dinosaur.
But Jaws is a good game where you've got like four players, one playing as the, or up to four players, one playing as the shark, and then up to three players hunting down the shark. It's a kind of hidden movement game. And yeah, like it's really good game. It kind of flips halfway through. You've got like two stages and you flip the board round halfway through, so you go from protecting the island to fighting on the ship for the second half of the stage. And yeah, like
them
it's
on the island, we will fight them on the ships,
fight them on the beaches. But yeah, like it's a really good game. Really highly recommended. It's one that we already have at Loading, but we kind of be refreshing the one we have, and you'll have a copy that you can win just by coming along and trying it out on the evening. Join the over 2,100 members in our meetup group. You can search for Tabletop Tuesday on meetup.com, or there's more details on the top left-hand corner of Big Red Barrel, or you can just come along and join us at the Loading Bar in Stoke Newington from 7:30, 8 o'clock-ish, going on till 10:30, where we'll do the prize draw. So come along and join us, and you could win a copy of Jaws just by trying it out this evening. Or on that evening, rather. Not this evening. That doesn't work. Well, it depends when you listen to the podcast, I guess.
I have a question.
Yes?
Are there any wrestling-related tabletop games over at the Loading Bar in Stoke Newington? That is not wrestling. That Street Fighter
thing. We did have a wrestling one, but I think it's moved on to Peckham. I don't think it's in the Loading Bar anymore.
Don't like it. Not happy.
I will investigate for you.
Boycott the Loading Bar in Stoke Newington until we get wrestling games.
I mean, they've got wrestling video games, Coleman. So, you know, you'd be happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had some fun there. Well, in the old way. Right. If you've enjoyed this show, ditto. But thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. You can do us a good old favor and go over to whatever podcasting platform that you are listening to us on. This would be for listening. And give us a review. We do like 5-star reviews. They are our favorite, but we won't judge. We won't judge out loud, but we will silently scathe towards you.
I'll judge out loud. I'll tell you on the show.
Throw things through the internet at you. But yes, if you could give us a review, I'm told that helps us in an algorithm of some sort. That would be nice if you could do that.
Please, and of course,
all the reviews come back to us and we can read them on the show and judge you silently behind the eyes. I don't know.
Not silently.
If you want to get in contact with the show, you can. We're on bigredbarrel.com. Over there, we have a link to our Discord. We've got a comment section on the website, obviously. And we're available on social media, Facebook, X, Threads, at Big Red Barrel, and YouTube, Big Red Barrel TV. Despite my best efforts, we still haven't changed that. You can go onto any of them's platforms. Although Discord is probably the best one because it's kind of like a big old chat room where we like to talk. Mm-hmm. It's like the old days of the forums, but it's on Discord.
Yeah.
And you can ask us questions there. You can ask questions anywhere, but that is the preferable one. Much like Ed has done. It's Ed. He says, I have a question.
Oh.
Have you ever played a new genre for the pod only to find out that you're actually really good at it? Discovering you're great at strategy games or at an ace at combat. I thought he wrote at ace combat, but he wrote ace at combat. Whereas we know Tim only plays the game in amateur mode.
Yeah,
amateur mode, Tim.
I think the opposite is true. I think I've played games and then gone, oh yes, I'm terrible at this genre. as proved on the internet.
I mean, so I, before I started on here, I very rarely played first-person shooter games. I was not a fan. And especially when it came to online multiplayer, not that I do it now, but I really, really got into the first Destiny game, and I really got into the Crucible, and I played a lot of Destiny and Crucible, and I was actually pretty good at it. Actually won games. And then me and Dan would team up, and then we would suck. So I've got a feeling Dan's not actually very good at Destiny, and Coleman is your MLG Pro 360 no-scope gamer.
Yo, it's your very boy. Much, so I don't think he's a big fan of the Crucible. He doesn't
really like PvP stuff.
Well, I mean, like, burns on IP comparatively to how many hundreds of hours he put into, you know, the main game and cooperative stuff, I don't think he plays as much. But yeah,
the other turn-based strategy type fightery games, like, I've always not. I mean, I liked back in the day the old RPGs and things, but the sort of the like your XCOM types, I never liked those.
Right.
Really got into Mario and Rabbids. I think that could be Matt Rabbids' influence more so than the actual strategy part. But, you know, I played that to completion and the DLC expansion and all that. I don't know if I'm good at it or not, but I enjoyed it. And football games. I played FIFA just for this show 1 year. And now I'm so good at it that Tim's never beat me at FIFA.
I mean, because we've never played each other, but, you know.
That's the small print of my statement.
Yeah.
Damn you and your facts and logic.
I ain't falling for no banana in my tailpipe.
I don't think I have any good examples, even thinking through it at all. I don't necessarily claim to be good at games. Like, I think that somehow, that sometimes makes me more applicable at doing this. Like, you know, I'm just your average gamer. I'm not necessarily good at any one particular genre. I have things that I like, and so I've played more, like turn-based strategy things and other stuff. And yeah, Mario Rabbids is definitely entry-level strategy game things where it's not so hard and there's not so much permadeath and all that type of stuff. But it was still a good game, and still, you know, they had to have an element of strategy to get through it. But yeah, I mean, I'm not adverse to a hard game. I like Souls-like stuff, even though I'm not necessarily particularly good at them either, but...
That's probably another one, like Bloodborne. I played that for talking about on the show because we were doing the previews on the show. I wanted to review it for the show, and I did not like Souls-like games and Dark Souls before that, and really into that game. Ended up playing through Sekiro and playing the latest one that's name is escaping me all of a sudden. I keep wanting to say Elder Scrolls, and it's not Elder Scrolls. Elden Ring. Thank you, Tim. So yeah, that's another example. Yeah, I guess there's a lot of games that, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm particularly good at them, but there's a lot of ones that I found I've enjoyed through playing them for this show.
The other thing I think makes me reasonable, I'm not saying I am a brilliant podcaster or I'm brilliant at reviewing stuff. But
you say that all the time off mic.
I do behind the scenes, obviously.
In that voice.
Silently with my eyes. But I think one thing that, like, I'm well versed and decent at being able to pick up a game and go, okay, I don't like this game, but I can appreciate that it is a good, well-made game that other people will like for these reasons.
Game smell. yes. There's a part two to this as well, which I think we can answer pretty quickly. Yep. What is a genre that is overdue a mainstream... Oh, this is also Ed, sorry. What is a genre that is overdue a mainstream comeback? Is it about time a simulation game becomes the next big thing? No references to Brock Lesnar. You can't say next big thing on this show.
Light synthesizers. I've been playing that. Like, they could do with a comeback. That'd be cool.
I think rhythm games need to make a comeback because I think rhythm games kind of, they went to the wayside in favor of, they're still rhythm games, but a different type. The guitar heroes and the dance revolution. The ones that were more physical that had to have a peripheral alongside it. I miss the old rhythm games. I've said this many times.
Yeah.
I miss Busta Groove, which I think I think that's probably owned by Square Enix. I think that was Enix published.
My answer for this would be light gun games, but I think both light gun games and rhythm games have had a bit of a resurgence in VR. which, you know, I managed to get through the whole episode with barely mentioning VR, because I mentioned Akarar earlier in the episode and Polybius. But yeah, like I think that's, yeah, that's two things that have had a resurgence in VR because the technology makes sense with it. But yeah, I don't know. Like,
when's VR going to have a resurgence, though?
Cheeky bugger.
It's pretty dead. It's pretty dead, Tim.
VR is dead. Long live VR.
Wouldn't you agree?
No.
Tim, wouldn't you say that VR's dead, Tim? Tim, you know how no one plays VR anymore?
I'd be interested to see what Sega are doing with their kind of reimaginings of games like Crazy Taxi and
covered in dust, this thing,
Jet Set Radio and stuff, because yeah, like they are very much arcade games, and I think I want to see them come back as arcade games, but I'm interested to see if they're making arcade games come back or whether they're reinventing them, and yeah, whether Golden Axe, they've tried to reinvent that a few times and that didn't work well, so
coming back,
arcade games, it's coming back, is something, yeah. Something yeah. I'd like to see come back.
I think that's one of Sega's big focuses, reinventing a bunch of their old games. As we've seen, they're going to do a Crazy yeah. Taxi. Golden Axe was thrown in there. So, and Sega is like one of the biggest names in arcades. They still had arcades until a few years ago, or a year ago. So,
also, it's not a genre, but AAA games. Like, we've had apparently a quadruple A game, but no one's making AAA games anymore apart from Rocksteady. Not Rocksteady. Rockstar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Rocksteady, I guess, when they're not making Suicide Squad.
That's apparently come down in price on PC. I'm just waiting for it to be about half price on console,
no.
And I might pick it up.
Don't do it. Don't do it. The gameplay's repetitive and dull and not fun, yeah, and just watch all the cutscenes on YouTube.
King Shark, maybe?
Mate, you're not going to have a good time. You're just throwing your money at down the toilet. Just do that. Just go flush £20 down the toilet right now. You have about as much enjoyment as you did playing Suicide Squad.
I'm probably going to concentrate my financial resources on Rise of the Ronin, but still. Before we go, I have a question to ask of you and our listeners, viewers, possibly. I want to get input from you. Have we got time to do so? Are you sure?
You've got to be very quick.
Okay. I'm really considering, and although they are out of stock at the moment, I was kind of considering picking up a PlayStation Portal. But,
what?
Yes, but kind of gave pause and was looking at the Logitech G Cloud as an option, especially as I could get one secondhand for only about £50 more than the PlayStation Portal. Don't know if any of our viewers or listeners have got a Logitech G Cloud, but that means I could apparently then play stuff like, you know, from my Xbox, PlayStation, on streaming through that, and then possibly play some stream stuff, from Steam stuff on it as well. But I don't know whether I should just get one of those, or the other option I thought of just getting a... because I don't like playing games on my phone, particularly, with a pad. But I was thinking maybe I just put a couple hundred quid into getting a tablet, and then stream to that and connect a controller to that, possibly. Don't know what my best option is there, trying to weigh up which one. So which one do you think I should go for, Coleman, and which one do our viewers think I should go for?
I would not recommend getting a PlayStation Portal, because if you take a look at the tech load, the teardowns, it's a very old Android tablet. It's not very high powered. Right, yeah. It has a lot of problems. Having to stay online is a big issue with that thing. And to be honest, like the best option you have, because the most powerful version of the thing that you've got that is more powerful than the PlayStation Portal is your phone. But you say that you don't want to play on your phone. But I think one of these with, because if you use the Backbone, then you can use the official PlayStation app. If you want to use other third party controller grip things like the Razer Kishi and all those kind of things, you can use third-party apps instead, which do take a bit of tinkering about to sort out. But I think that is worth doing, especially if you have like unlimited data and a 5G connection. If you
that's
want
the thing,
to,
you do need to. All right, I don't have unlimited data, so like it's a big amount. I think it's like 10 gigs or something, but it's not unlimited. So that kind of prevents me from doing it.
You'll leave through the other thing. Quick.
I wouldn't be able to do that on an old phone because I'd need the data connection as well, basically. I wouldn't be able to do it via Wi-Fi in my house.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah, you can do it via Wi-Fi, but it depends how good your Wi-Fi is, which we know yours is not great. Good.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. Because
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you want to do gaming on the go, I think the best thing to do is the phone and the controller option if you're looking to stream games. But using a service like a Game Pass Ultimate or something rather than going console to phone, because that's then you're then not only dependent on how fast is the connection from your phone. So if you are connected to a public Wi-Fi or something, that can be a problem, but also the Wi-Fi connectivity from your house. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's there is all that. Personally, just play games on the go. Get a portable gaming device and play portable games, you know? You've got a Nintendo Switch, for God's sake, Tim.
Yeah, but all right, I don't want to...
Get a Steam Deck!
I don't know. I was favouring one of those options over getting a Steam Deck, partly just because it gives us a different thing to cover for this show, which is why I was, you know, interested in, yeah, yours and other people's opinions on what we should do in that regard. But yeah.
All right. Well, we can look into this more and come back to it. I know we've spoken about this in the past because I've gone through my exploits of going handheld streaming platforms in the past. My best one was the Steam Deck, but that was something that I would tether to my phone so it's quite easy to take a Steam Deck and go, right, I want to play this. I just want to play my PlayStation through my Steam Deck at home because I don't want to do I want to use it like a Switch. Yeah. I want to sit on the sofa while I'm watching TV and do it that way. You can totally.
And that's mainly
that.
What and you can the do, use case of what I'm looking to do. I'm not looking to play on out and about.
Yeah, and you could totally do that through your phone as well.
Right.
But what I was trying to do is, like, when I'm on my lunch break, just tether my phone to my Steam Deck and play the console. That was a lot of setup to do, but it is doable. You can do that. It's just a pain in the ass to do it. So I know we've gone through a lot of these setups and talking about tech and all these solutions in the past. So there is a lot we can go through. We can dedicate some time to it at some point and go through this properly. Okay. I think it'd be fun. Yeah, it'd be a fun and interesting thing to do. I'm going to look at some platforms and come back to you. Yeah, I do not, from what I've seen of the PlayStation Portal, I do not recommend it. It's a janky piece of crap. And it's very overpriced.
That's why I think I was favouring one of the two options of a tablet or the Logitech. Mainly because it just gives me access to all of them on one device rather than having to have the PlayStation Portal and then not having access to Xbox, for instance. So.
Can you not put the PlayStation streaming app on your MacBook?
That's an option. That's something.
I think we just solved it.
that might be the easiest free option. Yeah, because I didn't think of that.
The early days of console streaming. That's what I used to do. I'd have it on a laptop, and then I'd put that on a little coffee table, and I'd be playing that while the TV's on just above that. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much your setup, anyway. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. All right, we solved it, guys. No need to answer.
All right, okay.
Tim's problem. Actually got the tech and problem he's not realised. Okay. Well, you got some extra content, guys. We're going to wrap it up now and get the heck out of here, considering our outro started probably about 20 minutes ago. So, hopefully Dan's back. Dan is back next week. I haven't got any games lined up for next week. Not yet, anyway. I'll go back to Final Fantasy, I think.
Oh, I do. I've got a new review code thing. And also, I've got multiple VR games, which I will talk about, hopefully, on VRB next week. As we play.
Ooh. Oh, should we just talk about them now?
I mean, could do, yeah. Yeah, fine.
Okay, so for episode 584, I have been Coleman.
I might have been Tim.
And Vince McMahon is a bad, bad man. Until next time, dear listeners and viewers. Oh, sorry. Like, comment, subscribe. I always forget to do that one. Thank you for watching.
Ring the bell.
Thank you for listening. Ring-a-ling the ding-ling. Until next time, goodbye.
and your ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.